Well, thank you. That was quick. We're delighted to reprise a panel that we did last year with an entirely new set of faces and talk about a critically important topic that's important to all of us, those in baseball and those not in baseball, and that is diversity and the power of it, the value of it, the challenges of making it happen, and so on. On our panel today, we have Dr. Lorena Martin sitting next to me with the Seattle Mariners. We have Essen Bokhari with the LA Dodgers, Emily Fragapani with the LA Dodgers, and Philip Cho with the LA Dodgers. So we have Dr. Morena and the Dodgers. It's the nickname of this panel. But we wanted to get into a good discussion on everything from, as I said a moment ago, why diversity is critically important to all of us, and some of the challenges that we're facing, and also some of the things that we can all do. I know many of you out there work for clubs, and many of you make hiring decisions or are in the mix for that, or at least give advice on hiring decisions. And I think it'll be important for you to hear what this panel has to say today. So before we go any further, what I'd like to do is have the panel go down the line and introduce themselves in a sense of telling you what they do today, but also a little bit about their background and their path to get into baseball. I think you'll all find that interesting, also including many of the students who are here who are very interested in working in the game. So why don't we start with you, Dr. Martin?
Hello, everybody. Well, I'm the director of high performance for the Seattle Mariners. Before this, I was at the LA Lakers, so I feel like I'm in the same crowd of LA, you know? But my background, it's pretty long, so I will try and make it like the Cliff Notes version. Bachelor's in psychology, master's in psychology. Then from there, I wanted to learn about the physiology, so I got my doctorate in physiology. And then I love statistics to be able to quantify what's really happening within the body as well as within the mind. So how do you do that? So statistics came to mind, and I ended up getting 3 postdocs in biostats, epidemiology, and spatial analysis. And so from there, I was asked to develop a course at Northwestern for sports analytics, kind of giving a nice synopsis of all that, and then wrote a book on that, got a call from the Lakers, and now I got a call from the Mariners, and here I am. What got me interested, I used to be an athlete, a tennis player. I pride myself in saying I do have a professional ranking, which was 8 pages below Serena Williams, but it's in there somewhere. It is there. So always wanting to understand what makes the difference between the great athlete, the legends, and you know, what are those psychological and physiological factors. Yeah.
Terrific.
Hello, everyone. So my background is also in psychology. I did a bachelor's at the University of Arizona in psychology and also one in math. And then I went to grad school at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champain. And so I did a PhD there in quantitative psychology. I was fully academic route. I got a position at the University of Illinois in the Department of Statistics as a visiting assistant professor. And the plan was to stay in academia. I was applying for academic jobs. And February came around. If anyone who's gone through that process is familiar with it, by February you haven't heard back, you're not going to hear back. So I started looking at outside academia. One of the first things I found was on Teamwork Online, which is a good source for sports jobs, not just baseball, but any sports. I found a position with the Dodgers, and it seemed to be one that fit. So unlike a lot of people a lot of our coworkers, I was lucky. I didn't have any internship with the baseball team. I got right into it and in a position that fit me perfectly, I think. So I started in 2015, right after I finished my position with the University of Illinois. And I've been there ever since. So a lot of stuff I do is with the statistical models and on the psychology side. so I get to implement both.
Great.
Hi, everyone. I'm Emily Fragapani. I am not a psychology background. I'm economics and statistics, so close enough. So I did my undergrad at Sonoma State in economics and statistics, and then I got my master's at UC Santa Barbara, also in economics. I have always been interested in baseball. It was kind of the dream job, so I never wanted to lock myself in, but, you know, I pursued a degree that I felt could get me in to the industry, and I was very fortunate to get a internship with the Dodgers when they were first really launching any sort of analytics with the team 5 years ago. It was between undergrad and grad, so 2013. So, yes, that's right. So I got my internship with the Dodgers early on, and they were fortunately, the timing worked out that I was able to go finish my master's degree, work for the UC Santa Barbara team, and then come back on full time. So I've been with the Dodgers for, it'll be 4 years this summer now. I've kind of bounced around in that time just based on, you know, the kind of changing landscape of the Dodgers front office in that time. So I started in the baseball operations department, bounced around to research and development. So I've done everything from some of the heavier statistical modeling to the day-to-day advance work. And now I've kind of found what I like to think is my niche in the performance science department, where I work a ton with our player development, helping to, you know, implement and help people to understand the kind of heavy modeling that people like SN do. So making that accessible and usable to our coaching staff and to our players, as well as a lot of the new, you know, data applications to development. So kind of bounced around, but that's where I'm at right now and what I've enjoyed in this last year or so.
Cool. Not working. Okay, there we go. Thanks for having me. I'm Philip Cho. I'm also with the Dodgers. And so my story, I guess, I went to the Air Force Academy. I graduated the Academy in 2009. So after that, I served my commitment. So during that commitment time, I went straight from the Academy to MIT, did a two-year master's program in OR. So completed that in 2011. And then from there, went to Edwards Air Force Base, served as a flight test analyst. So just testing new systems for the Air Force, doing statistical analysis on those tests, writing reports, pretty cool job. And then from there, I went back to the Air Force Academy and taught for 2 years in the math department. And during that time, I received a phone call from the Dodgers saying they were looking for someone with the OR background through some connections of mine through MIT. And they said, would you be interested in applying? I was like, yeah, of course. Like, who's not gonna wanna apply for a sports job? So never crossed my mind that I would actually work in sports. You know, you go to the academy, it's not in your mind that you're gonna go work for a baseball team when you're like on a flight line somewhere with some aircrafts. So came out of the blue, but very grateful for the opportunity. Ended up doing like a 6 month, trial project with them as kind of like an application slash interview. See how that went. Went really well. I enjoyed it. I guess they enjoyed it enough to hire me. So they extended me an offer. And so that from then on, I guess I joined the Dodgers full time in 2016. So I've been with them for a couple of years now.
Oh, that's terrific. And one of the themes as we went down the line here is look at how important education is in the game today. I mean, that's one of the things that struck me as I was listening to the introductions. If you go back 5 or 10 years, the percentage of people in front offices that had the levels of education that people have today, I think is far different. And so I think that's something for all of you who are out there who are still acquiring education and in that mode. And by the way, we never have to be done acquiring education, but many of you are still considering grad school and the types of programs. So just take note of what's up here on the panel. And the other thing I'll say is kudos to the Dodgers for both their efforts in hiring a really diverse front office, and this is just a representation of it, believe me, but also people who can really advance the thinking in the game. And the acknowledgement that that's important. So back to our core topic here. You know, some of you may wonder why this topic is relevant and is important now. I suspect many of you are way past that, but for those of you who want to be refreshed perhaps, there's really two reasons why MLB is very focused and society in general is very focused on diversity and sees importance in diversity. One is there's a business case for diversity, and we'll talk about that in a minute. And the other is there's societal reasons why diversity makes sense and adds value. I'll speak to the business case first, and that is there are a lot of studies that have been done that illuminate the value in diverse perspectives, and the value that diverse perspectives bring to complex problems, and allow us oftentimes, if you have open exchange from diverse perspectives, we often reach a higher level of solution to a problem because we're bringing a different orientation. I mean, just think of it as the opposite of groupthink. I mean, if you get nothing against old white guys, because I happen to be one, but if you get seven old white guys sitting around a table, the odds of coming up with an answer that's been done before, that's more standard, is extremely high. Now, yes, there are people who can break that mold, but it comes much more naturally when you have a diverse workforce, diverse by gender, diverse by ethnicity, diverse by even age. So I think that's the business case for why diversity in a highly competitive industry like this one, diversity can make the difference between winning and losing. But there's another side of it too. It's not just because there's a business reason and there's a financial return from it. If you look at our values as a country, it's the right thing to do. And rather than me illuminate that, I'm going to ask Philip, we talked a little bit about it earlier. Maybe you can talk a little bit about the broader case for diversity and the value that we all see in it.
Sure. I guess when it comes to like the motivation for diversity and pursuing that, there is a business case. But I guess for me, the societal cases or the societal issues surrounding it seem to be a bigger issue for me. In that, whenever you look at society and you look at any subset of the population, whether it's looking at baseball front offices or you look at top 1% of income earners or CEOs across Fortune 500 companies or any subset of the population, when you see a lack of, or if the demographics of that group don't match up with the demographics of the general population, I think that, for me at least, something seems inherently wrong with that. And I think it stems from the fact that that kind of signals a symptom of a lack of equality of opportunity, right? And it's a very competitive environment where everybody wants to be in the top 1% of income earners, where people want to be CEOs, people want to be GMs or in the front office of baseball teams. When you see like the demographics are vastly different than the general population, you're like, what's going on? How come people aren't, it's not that people don't want those jobs, for example. I think for me at least, I'm like, something's messed up here because the opportunities aren't being, aren't the same across all groups, at least for young people. Like people coming up, whether it's middle school, high school, college, something's not right with how these opportunities are being spread across that population. So, I think, and then from there you go on to, well, I think all these young people should have equal opportunities at these jobs. And so that's, for me, part of the reason why I think diversity is a huge issue.
Anybody else have anything to add on that portion of the topic? By all means, jump in.
Yeah, so I think to Phil's point, it starts at a young age, right? You have to get kids interested in baseball, for one, if you want to get them in baseball jobs, but also in science, technology, engineering, mathematics, the STEM fields. And when you have socioeconomic status, the classes that are disproportionate across groups, that's going to lead to, as Phil is saying, worse opportunities. And that's a deep and difficult problem to solve. And this problem of diversity in baseball, improving that, that's important, but it definitely runs a lot deeper than just baseball.
Yeah. Yeah.
It really is at a societal issue, a societal problem.
Lorena, did you want to add to that?
I completely agree. I mean, there's parts in my book where I discuss, certain access to certain sports, that's the population you're gonna get, and it's limited in a way by socioeconomic status. And a lot of times, for instance, my background, there's no way, I think back now and I'm thinking, my parents should never have put me in tennis. Never. Because it was really difficult. I mean, I had to work for an airline to try and be able to get travel days to go and use the airline to go to tournaments, which is not really how a tennis player becomes a tennis professional, right? So it's something that it is what it is, mm-hmm. right? But being aware of it and then trying to help out and provide opportunities for others to get closer to the same start line. Because what we have, and it's nobody else's fault either, because it's not the other, let's suppose, you know, somebody who comes from a high socioeconomic status, maybe their parents and their great-grandparents, they worked, you know, their tail off. Not to say that the others didn't, but hey, they have that, you know, that starting point, and that's respectful too, because it's coming not necessarily from them, but from their background. So it is what it is. You know, it's not like you're going to see a very diverse population in tennis or in golf or in equestrians, you know. I'm serious. Have you looked at that population?
Yeah.
So, and you know, eventually, little by little, as we further our education, I think you'll see more diversity, which is a nice thing too, because it's interesting because, like, for instance, coming into the baseball front office and even dealing with the players, with the players themselves, my role is kind of unique in the sense it's kind of hybrid. So I'm at the executive level, but I pride myself in going into the grassroots level and kind of getting a feel for what the pulse is, because I think that's how you understand what's wrong and not. And so I look at the cliques within, you know, there's the Caucasians, they kind of group together, they all get along, and then there's the Latino clique, and then, you know, one or two other, you know, different ethnicities, right? And they kind of separate, and I'm trying to bring them together, you know, talking to them and showing them how sometimes you're saying something different, but you're meaning the same thing. I had a player just come and tell me the other day, oh, so that doesn't mean he would be mad at me? I'm like, no, in the Latino culture, they're mad at themselves, so you're taking it the wrong way. And then this is how they start to clash rather than work together. And so it's interesting. It's it's a very complex issue, as Ishan said.
Emily, you've been in the organization now for what, 5 years, did you say?
Four years? And then a break in between the internship.
Yeah, so about 4 years. What kinds of changes have you seen just in the environment around you in the game, within the Dodgers, but also more broadly in the game in the time that you've been here, and how much progress are we making?
Yeah, I think that it's, you know, even not just in the Dodgers front office, but across the game, I think that the strides that the industry has made has been huge. I think we took a head count maybe 3 years ago of how many women we could find in front offices and analytics position. It was four, and the Dodgers employed half of them, me and my coworker. And so, you know, that's obviously a very small number, to Phil's point, disproportionately small, especially relative to even what we're seeing in academia as far as how many women are in technical fields. And even if it's not in analytics, it's just even this off season, I just happened to notice there were another four or five women in baseball operations positions. Mm-hmm. And so even just looking at that number, again, it's small, probably still too small, but to have doubled in that time, I think speaks to the direction, the trend that the industry is going, being a very positive thing.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things that I think is a positive, another positive about this is that in many organizations, when you make the effort to diversify, you're dealing in a little bit more of a zero-sum environment in terms of the jobs. Here you're not. Think of all the new positions that are being added to baseball in front offices, in analytics and sports science, and the like, and those are just two examples. So as you see the pool of analysts and people in the game growing in front offices and team personnel expanding, there, it's a perfect opportunity and a perfect timing to diversify the workforce because of that. You know, talk about, and anyone really can jump in on this, but talk about some of the obstacles you see to becoming a more diverse workforce today.
Yeah, so I specifically think that obviously you like to think that there aren't people who are specifically not hiring, which is just, like, to your point, not good business sense. If you have a good candidate who's a woman or a minority, it's just you're shooting yourself in the foot from a business perspective by not hiring them. But I do think that one of the largest things is that it's just people aren't as aware. So I was very lucky in that, you know, I read Moneyball. My dad was always interested in baseball. So I happened to know that this was a career path. But I really think that from a, I think the maybe friendliest explanation, if you don't want to, you know, make people out to be trying to keep people out, that people just aren't aware. You know, people don't know that there are analytics routes in baseball. This is obviously becoming much more well publicized, and people know about it more now. But even on campuses, like just letting people know, like having teams go into campuses and recruit there, I think would be a like really good small but good small first step. Just so that people know that that's an option, that's something that they can gear themselves towards and start planning for. I think that the other biggest barrier that's a little harder to get around is, many of you have touched on this, just the socioeconomic status, you know, especially even not on the research side, but people trying to get into scouting and video internships and things like that, that not everybody just socioeconomically has the luxury of going out to AFL games, writing up reports, and hoping they can make a connection with people and not making any money and doing the associate scout thing. That's like the way that a lot of people are able to get their foot in the door in more traditional baseball positions, and socioeconomically, that is not doable for a lot of people. I don't know what the solution to that is, but I do see that as being one of the biggest gaps.
The teams can pay us more. That's but yeah, I think that's a big point, because you know a lot of people get into baseball by doing internships, and to do that, especially when you're in school and you're trying to complete school and you got student loan debt, possibly that's a hard thing to do. And a lot of the people that we see getting that will do the internships are people who can afford to do it, and so that right there filters a certain group of people. And you're filtering out people.
Well, you know, even in many instances, first jobs, you're the one who said a moment ago that you were able to enter straight into the organization in a full-time position. But as we all know, many people whose first job is in baseball after they graduate school, when they would in another industry be interviewing for a full-time job, they're really interviewing for a one-year commitment from a baseball team. And so this is a supply-demand issue that teams have capitalized on, I'll use that word, but perhaps to really build diversity, they need to rethink that. You know, and it's always easy to use the cost of a utility infielder versus the cost of hiring, you know, 70 or 150 interns, but that's kind of what it comes down to. So you wonder why, you know, you can pay $3.5 million a year for utility infielder, but you're not willing to pay maybe any more than intern wages for that first job coming out of school. And by doing that, I don't think a lot of people in the game over the years, they're more conscious of it now, have been conscious of how that screens out and eliminates disadvantaged people. Philip, what's your thoughts on some of the obstacles that you see for minority hiring or even minority success in the workplace once they are hired?
Sure. So first of all, I'll say I agree completely with what Emily and Essen said there about just what's become the traditional route into baseball front offices and the expectation that you work internships, or oftentimes multiple internships at very low wages, where you really can't do it without financial assistance from either family members or some other fellowship outside of baseball. So I'll give one plug for Tyrone Brooks in the back of the room there with the diversity pipeline. I think they've done a great effort. They've kind of realized that. And they have a program now where it's an 18-month fellowship where they're looking for minority candidates or underrepresented groups, and having like a set wage that they know is like a decent wage that people can actually afford to take on even as a without external resources. So I think that's a big step. Other obstacles, I think. So one thing, you know, when we talk about diversity, if you look at the candidate pool, what usually ends up happening is you like have a job posting, and then you'll get hundreds of applications, and you're like, oh, like I really want to, you know, try to pursue hiring a diverse workforce, and then you look at the candidate pool, and you're like, well, the candidate pool is not very diverse. Like you get these applications, and if you wanted to emphasize diversity in your organization, like you can't do it if no one's applying. So I think one thing, I think Emily hit on this briefly, but it's going out and actively recruiting, I think we've been very passive in terms of, yeah, we want to promote diversity when the right application comes across our desk. Whereas if you look at other companies, a lot of companies, the Bay Area that I know of, I have family members working at HR out there who they make a concerted effort to have groups go out to campuses to partner with local organizations or women in science and STEM, like local women STEM groups, to kind of get the word out and actively recruit. Just don't wait for I really hope I get a good minority candidate application coming across my desk next time I have a job opening. You go out and change and try to actively change that candidate pool as much as you can. And oftentimes I think we sit there and say, well, we got other things. We're busy. We're all busy. So it's a matter of just prioritizing diversity and saying, this is something I'm going to spend resources on to try and go and change the candidate pool. That happens at the organizational level. I think it happens at the league level. That's all of our responsibilities.
To speak to Philip's point about having a nice pool of candidates, in addition to having a diverse candidate pool, also being qualified. So to me, if you're not qualified and you're diverse, I'm probably not picking you. It is what it is, to be as nice. Meet the qualifications or exceed, go above and beyond and make yourself more competitive. That's how you get chosen, or that's how I would choose you. Because being diverse can bring the added bonus of, hey, you can see things from a diverse perspective, from a different perspective that could add on. But definitely making sure that you meet the same requirements that everyone else is meeting.
Yeah. By the way, I want to remind the audience to please put some questions down in index cards and give them to Jeff in the back of the room. We'll be happy to answer your questions in a few minutes. What about functioning in the workplace environment today with your status of who you are? Is it, do you feel like you're disadvantaged in any way? And I know that's a tough question to answer on a personal level, but, is the workplace environment accepting you in the same way that they would a white male?
I think that's a really hard question to answer, and not to toe the team line, but I do want to give the Dodgers a shout out. Obviously, just the candidates that have been hired, there's an effort to it, but I work really closely with our player development staff, our pro scouts, our amateur scouts. It is not a party line. I've never had a bad experience with a single member of our staff, which I think is really, really rare, as we've seen with all these headlines and everything, or mm-hmm. with our players for that matter. I've never had a bad experience. So I think on my end, I feel very lucky about that, and I do want to give the Dodgers credit, Andrew Farhan, for prioritizing bringing good people on board. Do I at least want to say that? I think there's a little bit of a functional aspect, I can't shower at the complex, things like that. But other than that, at least mm-hmm. I just feel the need to speak to the Dodgers being very good about that.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I'll add on to that. Yeah, obviously, I've also had a great experience. I think part of the reason why we've had that great experience in the Dodgers front office is because we have that diverse front office. Part of the reason why I think part of the business case for pursuing diversity is it creates a more inclusive environment, an environment of mutual respect and understanding. And so when you're the first one in the front office, for example, if you're the first minority in a room full of, white scouts, you might feel uncomfortable. But when you're not the first one or the only one in the room, it allows you to kind of reach your max potential as well. You can talk, you feel more comfortable speaking out. You have someone, there's basically just a higher level of respect because they're familiar with your background, have learned a little bit more about you. So from that standpoint, I think I've had a really good experience because of the diversity in our front office. Now, I can't speak for other teams, so I won't try to guess what that's like, but I think that is a big reason why I feel comfortable and are able to perform. Am able to perform at a high level. It's because of diversity in our front office.
Yeah, that's great.
Speaking to the Mariners, I have to say that it's been amazing. I feel like one of the guys, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. They speak to me perfectly fine, both from the front office as well as the players. That's also another thing. If you're a woman and you want to be in the sports, then you can't take offense to certain. Not saying that they would offend, but you're going to be treated like another person in there. Mm-hmm. And so not taking anything out of context is also important so that they know that, hey, okay, we can treat you the same if you want to be treated the same. I do shower in our complex. And, you know, I'll knock before I'm like, hey, is anybody in there? All right, no? Okay, we're good. And, you know, just watch out. But
yeah.
That's it.
No, that's
it's
great.
Anatomy and physiology. Come on.
That's great. And you know, and the reason I asked the question is there can be subtleties. Let me give you an example from a different era. Okay, when I was working in the corporate world, I spent 20 years at PepsiCo. And when I used to look around the halls as I was ascending through the organization, I saw a lot of other white males who were roughly in my age bracket. And you know what that means? It means when you have a bad day, you can go to the next office, sit down, kick back, and start commiserating with your coworker. It's so easy to do because you are in so many ways like him. And for my women peers, for my African American peers, for my Hispanic peers, they were few and far between. And of course, it's a different time. We're talking 20 years ago. They didn't have that luxury, and they had to deal with some of the stresses that I could, you know, I had a whole network that was built in that was all like me. And there was tremendous advantage for that. I don't think I understood that at the time. I came to realize it later on in my career. And I also tried to do everything I could to reverse it and correct it. But there's some subtleties when you're working in a non-diverse environment and you're part of the majority. And of course, it works the opposite way if you're part of the minority. So it's great to hear, you know, I think we're at a point now where when organizations are diverse enough, this factor I'm talking about gets washed away. Because just like I had peers, each of you have peers that are in your you know sort of same realm. So, what you know, we talked about the diversity pipeline program. This program is something that MLB instituted 2 years ago now, and it's beginning to really make progress. Progress always comes probably slower than the impatient people want it to come, but nonetheless, it's a wonderful commitment that the Commissioner Manfred made, and that. Is being headed up by Renee Tirado and of course Tyrone Brooks, and this whole area of diversity and inclusion has made significant strides. What are some of the things that you think Major League Baseball can do to continue to accelerate and advance diversity in the ranks?
Personally, I think what Tyrone and Felicia are doing out there with the Diversity Fellowship, I think that's great, offering diverse candidates that are qualified an opportunity to become interns with the teams. I think it's amazing. And I think that, as well as the other suggestion of going onto the campuses, maybe going into lower socioeconomic status neighborhoods near university settings, that may also enhance the candidate pool. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and to that, also starting younger. I think you have to get kids involved and get them interested in, and just know that this working in baseball is an opportunity and that they can pursue that if they focus on school. I think education is important, so starting them younger, not just going into the colleges, but into the middle schools, high schools, and getting them interested in baseball and presenting opportunities, because it doesn't necessarily have to be in the STEM fields. There's plenty of opportunities in baseball that aren't mathematical or scientific.
Great. You know, I like to shift gears and start the questions, and perhaps we'll even get a few other questions as we start to comment on these. First card says, great to see a panel without an Ivy Leaguer on it. Well, there you go.
No, I wasn't. Technically, I guess.
Lorena and for Emily, the Me Too movement in baseball, if so, has the industry discussed and addressed this issue? And I realize you're fairly new to baseball.
Yeah.
But either of you, has there been any dialogue and discussion around the hashtag Me Too movement in baseball that you're aware of?
On my end, no, not yet.
Honestly, I think there aren't enough women to have a conversation.
Well, yeah. From the, you know, being the man side point, I guess, we do sexual harassment training. I don't think it's enough, but this really was in reaction to the domestic violence in the NFL, But it's a start. I think there needs to be more conversation, and not just among the women, but among the men, because we're the perpetrators most of the time. And this is one way to do that, but more dialogue, I think, would be helpful.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Here's a question. One of baseball's biggest issues is having a diverse audience, right, a diverse following, compared to, say, basketball and football. How much of this issue is a player marketing issue? How much of this issue could be a pace of play issue? How much of this issue could be a diversity workforce issue within MLB? How would you sort of process through that?
At least from my perspective, I think all of those are factors that affect our audience base. And I think there was a recent, I forget where I saw this, but it was like, if you look at the average age of a baseball fan, the average age of an NBA fan, I think the average baseball fan is like 10 to 20 years older. The NBA has done an amazing job of connecting with the youth and kind of making inroads with other parts of popular culture, and like really being having that brand solidified. And I think baseball has, in my mind, and from what I've seen, this is my own perspective, I think been lacking in that area. And I think, I don't really know. I guess from the front office perspective, I think it would help if people were to look and see more diverse front offices, more diverse scouts. But I think, I don't really know how you address that otherwise, other than like the league really making a strong effort. Because if you look at our media or the scouts or people, like all the different facets of what are around this around the game, they usually come from the same culture, which is like a very strict, I guess, like there's all these like unwritten rules, and like you must have like show these like types of respect, and like people get mad about bat flips and all these things. And so unless there's like a concerted effort from the league and like a league-wide effort, I don't know that it's gonna as a natural process, it might take forever. Mm-hmm.
Here's a question. Do you think that MLB or MLB teams would benefit from having free information sessions at community centers or schools regarding diversity and jobs in baseball to gain a more diverse perspective and a diverse workforce, rather? Is some of that happening today in terms of taking the message out to schools and to young people around the country?
A big part of it truly is about our partnership with our 30 clubs. And as part of that is making sure every club has a plan, and they're kind of mapping out truly their ideas, how they want to make sure they get the opportunities out there, make sure people aware that a career does exist in the industry. Also, we're also trying to incorporate into what we're doing on the youth side as well, as part of the youth programs, which is led by Tony Regans, that group, and building urban academies, adding aspects of skill improvement, and also areas to learn. That's one of the things we're trying to do right now as well with each urban academy, making sure there's more things being done in terms of understanding with, if we can incorporate things with analytics, other areas, science and STEM, just being a part of everything there. So it's in addition to life skills as well, but also trying to continue educationally, making sure that the kids understand this is an option for them going forward.
Yeah, that's great. And it makes perfect sense that the leverage here for MLB is to help develop and institutionalize this among the 30 clubs who are out there in the local market, live there every day, and can operationalize this and get the most out of it. It wouldn't be logical for MLB to sort of be touring around the country doing it, but to help create a template and to create the framework that MLB teams can bring out to the market and then share the best practices that they're doing around makes a lot of sense. And we've talked about this before, all of us, is that it's so important for minorities to see people like themselves in roles that they can relate to. I can't tell you how many times I've talked to a fan who's a minority and who said, it really connected with the game when I saw that player who looked like me. It's one thing to adore an athlete who is totally different from you in every way, but it's another thing to have them like you. And the same The same applies to the workforce too. So for people doing jobs, I mean, for people doing the job that you do and that you do, Emily, I mean, this is a whole, you know, a whole eye-opening experience for so many young people who might be in seventh or eighth grade right now and might have the aptitude for the very things that make your job, you successful in your job. So it's really an important piece. Playing experience is a plus. You hear of that a lot. While women may play softball, they don't often have the same baseball playing options as men. What can you do to combat that, to not having the opportunity to literally play baseball and then ultimately work in a baseball front office or in sports science or wherever?
In my opinion, I mean, even if you were a baseball player, you could argue that you didn't play baseball to a professional level. If you did, great, like one, you know, some of our coaches. But if you know what you're there to do and understanding, you know, your role, if your role is as a physiologist or biomechanist and you understand how the body works regardless of playing that sport or not, let me put it this way, I'd rather have a heart surgeon who's never undergone heart surgery and is really good at being a heart surgeon, okay? So that's my view on that, yeah.
I think that's an excellent point. And I do think the game is less tilted towards former players today. Not that, I mean, former players who, of course, know people in organizations by virtue of being in one and have the aptitude and the skills, they have a distinct advantage for sure. But not just the squatter's rights of having worn a uniform and played the game. That doesn't seem to have the impact that it once did. Well, we're just about at the end of our time, so I'd like to once again thank our panel for doing such a great job today.